You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, today's guest speaker.
Good morning and welcome to Unity of Tustin. Our senior minister, Reverend Carolyn Mathlin, is on sabbatical. So I just welcome you on behalf of the board and staff and our sabbatical team, welcome to Sunday Experience. Would you pray with me? I just invite you to close your eyes and just place both feet flat on the ground if they aren't already. Paul Tillich referred to God as the ground of all being. And so as we open our service and our experience today with our feet flat on the ground, not focusing on the floor or the carpet, but really about grounding in to Source, to God, to the Holy One. And as you find yourself grounding in, like that lightning rod that needs a ground, like that Moses experience of holy ground, God, we thank you for this time together. We ask that you would just ground us to this experience of this hour. And we gather ourselves from last week, from yesterday, from even this morning, to be present here. And we just breathe in the living spirit of God. Resuscitate us in this moment. As we come expecting and for whatever it is that we come for, we know, God, that you are here in us and in one another. And we thank you. Whatever need is present, whatever joy, whatever sorrow, we know, God, that you hold it all, and in community it is held. And so we honor you in ourselves and in one another. May it be so. Amen. I want to welcome Gail Hamley, who is with us this morning. Our senior minister, Carolyn Mathlin, is on sabbatical for 3 months, and Gail has come to be with us. Gail is a licensed Unity teacher and ordained ministerial counselor through Pathways of Light. She is a hospice volunteer and facilitator of transitions. She is a Reiki master teacher and published author of Life Expanded. Gail's passion is to help people discover their own power. So Gail is with us for these couple of summer months. As Reverend Carolyn is on sabbatical, she'll be teaching, bringing the talk most Sundays, as well as focusing on prayer and meditation through some of the classes that she will be offering. And so I just want to welcome you, Gail. Thank you so much for coming and being with Unity of Tustin.
Lessons I learned from my father. You know, in preparing for my talk, I was doing a little research, and I found something from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk. And it just, I'll read it, because there's certain things that I want to pull out of it in a moment. But he says, before having a child, it would be wonderful if people would take a year to look deeply into themselves, to practice loving speech and deep listening, and to learn the other practices that will help them enjoy themselves and their children more. Bringing a new life into the world is a serious matter. Taking a year for introspection and preparation doesn't seem too much. Doctors and therapists spend up to 10 years to get a license, but anyone can become a parent. Without any training or preparation, parents can learn how to sow seeds of happiness, peace, and joy in the new child. And I just was thinking about that, and I thought the first thing that stuck out was, you know, to look deeply, to take one full year, 12 months, 365 days, to look within ourselves and to practice loving speech and deep listening. How important are those skills when we have children? But it was that he also said so that they could enjoy themselves. Enjoy being a parent, relaxing into it and enjoying being a parent, and enjoying our children more. Usually, I remember when my kids were young, I was frazzled, you know, trying to get everything done and doing this and that. And no, looking back, it would have been wonderful to just relax in and enjoy them more. Let them know how important they are. You know that when you are being enjoyed, you're being appreciated. And the other thing that stood out to me was that the parents, he's saying, can learn how to sow seeds of happiness, peace, and joy in the new child. Now, I know that when we have children, we will stop and we'll hope, you know, and wish and dream for our children's success and happiness in their life. And that's really wonderful and important. But he's asking us to actually do more, because there's a sowing. So that means that we have to participate. And just as you would plant in a garden, you have to think about what you're planting. You have to nurture the soil. You have to water it all the time. There's a certain amount of participation that you're being asked to at a much deeper and conscious level, to plant within your children happiness, peace, and joy. How wonderful to think of that. And in being asked to do that, to take that commitment on. But I remember being a parent, and I did not take a full year off in my consciousness in those days. I wanted children. I really wanted to have children, and I was full of joy when they came. But I know that I looked like a deer in the headlight when they put that little being in my hands, you know, that it was like, oh my. And I have often seen my daughters and other young new parents look the same way. It's like, okay, we appreciate the miracle of the birth of this child. Help. So, and they'll often say, I wish there had been a manual. I wish there was a manual. Well, I found a manual. Now, it's not going to tell you exactly how to change a diaper or what to do when you're up at 3 in the morning for 4 nights straight, or what to do when they're sneezing and coughing or crying or throwing a big tantrum. It's not going to tell you exactly what to do verbatim. However, it's going to give you something else that will help you to take care of all of those things and more. Because it's about consciousness. The manual I found was the Bible. Now, I'll explain it a little bit. You know, there's many ways of reading the Bible. You can read it verbatim. You know, they packed up and they moved to Jerusalem, or they went up the hill and found the burning bush, and verbatim, you're reading that. Or there's another way of reading where you just read a part and you sit with it, and then you ask, you know, what does this mean to me in my life today? It's called divine reading, Lectio Divina. And we're going to be, when I'm teaching class later, a few weeks about prayer, centering prayer, part of the centering prayer evening will be in reading the Bible in just that way, because it's a contemplative practice. And if you want to take on and learn more about being in a closer relationship with God, this contemplative life is really a great way to use your life as a tool for learning. So I decided I would take some of the fathers of the Bible and just go through some of the lessons that they're giving to us just in their lives. I mean, actually, the Bible is the whole story of patriarchs, men who are teaching us how to live through their errors and through their triumphs. So I started out with Adam, the first man spirit. Now, we always hear about man this, man that. Man spirit. Let's just start in the right place at the right time, right here. We are all spirits. We are all human. So Adam was the first man spirit. And he had no example to follow except God. He experienced heaven on earth, but then he turned away from God. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 9, God asks, "Where art thou?" Adam doesn't take responsibility for his choices. And when God asked him, "Did you eat of the forbidden tree?" he answers in verse 12, "The woman in whom thou gavest to me to be with gave me of the tree, and I did eat." Is he blaming God for giving him that woman? Which, haven't we done that sometimes? Blamed God for a situation. He teaches us about the consequences of our actions and about obedience to the Word of God. According to Charles Fillmore, our co-creator of Unity, he says, "Adam was a spiritual illumination, but when he began appropriating ideas of two powers, God and not God, good and evil, he fell away from his spiritual life and all that it involves." Now, Noah, his name means rest, calm, quiet. He rested in God despite what was going on around him. He was humble and protective of his family. He carried out the tasks that were given to him by God, and he showed faith and trust in the midst of all the naysayers. He built the ark. He and his family took refuge in the ark of God. And according to Charles Fillmore, taking on beings two by two represents taking into the ark of God all ideas inherent in being, the positive and the negative. It's all God. Now, Abraham, or Abram, as he started out to be, was the father of the Jewish nation, an enormous mission. He had tremendous faith. And through his faith, he followed his spiritual guidance, even when he was asked to bring his son as a sacrifice. He shows us that he denied his attachment to matter and affirmed his unity with spiritual substance. His name was changed from Abram exalted Father, to Abraham, father of a multitude. He showed us the importance of living in the world, but not of it. Now, his son Isaac, the name means joy or laughter, because he was the miracle child of Abraham and Sarah. Sarah was well beyond the age of being able to have a child. She was barren all of her life, basically. But then came this child. So Isaac was born of spirit. That's what a miracle is. When something happens and we just know that there's no way the human mind could have created such a thing or anything, that he was born of spirit. And he knew that. He knew within his being that he was born of spirit. He could have gotten really bitter and angry at his father for taking him up, and basically he was going to murder him right there on the mountaintop, but he didn't. He learned from his father the deep, deep faith and trust that he had in God, and he embodied that himself. He learned from his father. And he is one of the most favored fathers of the Bible. He fathered Jacob and Esau. Jacob means heel catcher. And it's kind of, he was a twin. Both Jacob and Esau were twins. And Jacob was the second one born. And so with the help of his mother, Rebekah, he stole his twin brother Esau's birthright, because the firstborn often gets the birthrights of the father. But he tricked his father and stole it. He fathered 12 sons who founded the 12 tribes of Israel. And as a father, he favored his son Joseph and created jealousy in his family among all the other brothers and his sons. Jacob started out, as you can see through this story, as a liar, a cheat, a manipulator. And then one night, he had a life-transforming dream, which you may recognize as Jacob's ladder. He awoke and he said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. What an awesome place this is. This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." This comes from Genesis 28, verses 16 and 17. And every Sunday we sing, "Surely this place, the Lord is in this place." He had this realization that wherever he was, God was. And it changed everything. He was renamed Israel, which means striving for God. And he taught us that God works with our obedience in spite of our disobedience. God works with the part of us that knows. And each one of us has that within us. He represents higher consciousness. Now Moses, his name means drawing out. And Moses represents that when we obtain a degree of understanding of truth, we are zealous for divine principles. There is a discipline inherent in zealousness. So Moses represents the process of drawing out from within to our acts without. And I remember coming to Unity of Tustin 20 or so years ago, and I wanted to go to every class. And I did go to every class, I think. And I started to change. And even my friends started changing. I stopped hanging out with this group, and I started hanging out with the people I was meeting in the classes. And we were talking the same language. And then my life, you know, my daughters and everything, the way I handled things at work, everything began to change. That's Moses. That's what Moses is trying to teach us. And then there's King David. David means beloved or well-loved. And he trusted God to help him defeat the giant Goliath. And then he put faith in God as he was on the run from King Saul. And his life was considered Christ-like before Jesus. In fact, Jesus comes from the house of David. David represents divine love, individualized in human consciousness. His son Solomon went on to become one of Israel's greatest kings. Now Joseph means whom Jehovah will add to, and I'm talking about Joseph, who was the foster father of Jesus. He protected his wife, Mary, and their baby. He had tremendous faith in God. He saw to Jesus' education and needs as he grew up. He taught Jesus in the Jewish tradition, and he taught him how to be a carpenter. He is called a righteous man, a kind and sensitive man. Joseph represents the daily strength, focus, and discipline, without fame, without glory, that supports the pillars of higher consciousness, so that Jesus could follow his path and become the Christ. Now, oftentimes we're doing the same thing. We get this little bundle of joy in our hands, and we don't know what their life is going to be like. We hope that they're going to have a happy life. We hope that, you know, everything's going to work out. But we don't know what path they're going to be taking. The parent is blind to the path that their children are going to take. And so was Joseph. Joseph knew that this was a special child, and he was given special circumstances. But he had no idea what would happen with Jesus in his life. But he did know that he had a solid faith and trust in God that actually, in retrospect, we see now are the pillars that were able to create the groundwork for Jesus to grow and embellish and go into his own ministry. Now we have the father of the prodigal son, which is a much more popular story. The father who welcomes his son with open arms and throws a party for him. And his lesson is non-judgment and unconditional love. And then lastly, God the Father, the first person of the Trinity, Father Creator. That is what Father means, one who brings forth. That's what Father means, bringing forth. Jesus, in his Christ consciousness, showed us a loving Father. Now, that's different from the Father that we were shown in the Old Testament. So Jesus showed us a new way of relating to God. So to put it in a quick recap, the things that these few men of the Bible taught us is to watch our thoughts. That's where actions take birth. Accept all ideas, positive and negative, as simply a part of life and rest in God. Grow in faith. Live in the world, but not of it. Know we are born of spirit and live from that place. Start where we are and develop higher consciousness. Draw forth that which is within us and then express it outward. Develop divine love. Strength, focus, discipline, love, compassion, kindness, pillars for supporting the Christ consciousness: non-judgment and unconditional love. And then Jesus taught us that he called God Abba. Abba signifies an intimate relationship with God. And in that relationship, he lived the qualities that God is, and he became those qualities through his intimacy with God. Now, being a father is a huge responsibility. And typically, the father is the head of the family, and much is expected of him. So, what did you learn from your father? Remember, we learn both from the good and the not so good, whether your father was present or not present. Your divine purpose, wherever you were placed in relationship with a father or a father figure, is your path to holiness. Look for the face of God in the Father that you have. Now, as I thought of my own father, I recognized how he taught me that our life circumstances do not dictate who we are. He was born of the poorest families on the reservation. He came from a broken home in a time where that was unheard of. And in those days, the woman was pushed out of the house, and the children, and there were nine of them, were kept by the father. And in this case, this was an abusive father, and she had no power. He went to a government school at the age of three because that's what they did in those days. They took the children out of the home as soon as they could. And at the age of three, he went to a government school, and it was not a very loving place. It was tough. He met his mother for the first time when he was five, when his sister took him into town and introduced him to her. He was so quiet and shy, he was hardly heard to speak. He was the baby of the family, the youngest of nine. And he taught himself the guitar, and he taught himself to sing. And then when he was in his late 50s or 60s, he taught himself the fiddle and won contests. He became an honored basketball player in high school, and he got his GED in the 50s and learned to swim then, too. I failed to mention that earlier service that he joined the Navy. He lied about his age and joined the Navy. Now, how could you be in the Navy and not learn how to swim? But he did. And he had a very successful and abundant career. He taught me about faith and strength. He and my mother married very young, and I was born when he was 20. And at 22, they had twins. And at 29, they had a profoundly retarded child. Life was hard, and there were times when it was almost unbearable. But he taught me to find joy wherever we are. Our home was full of music. His singing, his playing guitar, he worked hard. He often worked two jobs, and then he'd work in a bar playing music on the weekends. But we had friends over, and music filled our lives, and his faith was always there. He taught me the importance of family. He actually held us together. As my siblings and I moved away and my youngest brother was struggling, he protected my mother and kept us close. Through frequent phone calls and guidance, sometimes simply listening, as we went through our own trials and life lessons. He taught me about death. I walked with him the last year of his life. We became very close. And as I watched him let go of his guitar and his fiddle and his motorhome and my mother, that was the hardest part. And he just surrendered. It was the most beautiful experience of my life, and it's why I went into hospice work. He taught me about life after death. After he died, I sat in the living room as the coroner came and took his body away. I felt a presence. I felt a presence right here on the sofa next to me. It was like the two of us were watching the scene in front of us, and I just said, thank you, Dad. Thank you for letting me know that there's no death. Prior to moving to Texas, my daughter said she was looking him up on the internet just to see what would come up. And on YouTube, she suddenly found him and the room filled with his voice singing Waltz Across Texas. And she sent me the link. As his way of I know it was his way of telling me that he was supporting my move. So we don't often think about the legacy we're leaving, the gift we are leaving. But I invite you today to give some thought to it, or this week, or when you have some quiet time, think about the legacy that you're leaving. And I'm talking about women, too. It's not just Father's Day. We all have that father essence within us. But I ask you, if you had a father and you knew your father, or you had a father figure in your life, tell them what you've learned. Let them know what you've learned from them. What was their legacy to you? You are the strength and the soft landing, the teacher for your children. But even more than that, sometimes father can mean our role. So you might be a father figure at work or in the community. Remember, father means bringing forth. So expand your inquiry. All of us can ask ourselves, what is my legacy in this life? What am I bringing forth? And for the fathers, you are so important. You are bringing forth, you are a teacher, a guide, support for both the physical as well as the spiritual lives of your children. And for anyone who you see, anyone you touch. So I would like you, if you have seen yourself in any part of this talk today, to please stand so that we can thank you for being the light of this world. Please stand. Just want to bless you. Bless you and thank you. Because it's like the pond. Whatever you have touched, that pebble, is it resounding through the world? And you are that. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.